Jonathan Kraft is with us. Jonathan, how are you? Are you sleepy like the rest of us?
I'm sleepy and not happy like the rest of us, yeah.
It's been kind of a wild week because from the Patriots game last week, which involved an official's call, and of course the Sox game last night, it's been a lot to talk about here.
I don't know the baseball rule book, but you watch a World Series game and it bothers you that a game gets decided on a call like that. At the same time, if it's in the rule book, you sit there, and if you're on the other side of it, you'd be upset if it wasn't called. It's just too bad it's not decided between the lines with the players, but on a rule that's probably there so that people don't game the system during the season and obstruct guys, but I don't think that was conscious obstruction. But you sit there as a Red Sox fan, you're upset, and it's too bad. I'll tell you, though, it was a hell of a baseball game. The last two games have been great games, and they'll bounce back.
Well, you know, relative to the Jets game, there was a heck of a lot more that didn't go right that led to the loss than just the call at the end.
We shouldn't – that's what I've said all week, and I heard Rex said earlier this week they didn't do it, and I think the league came out today and actually said they did. But that what I've said all week is that doesn't matter. We shouldn't have been in that position. We had 11 points. We're up in the first half, and we have two possessions there at the end of the first half in the last 3 minutes or whatever. We don't convert, and we should never have been in the position where we went to overtime and that mattered. And yeah, hats off to their side of the field if they're tipping refs off to stuff and taking advantage of the rules like that. That's part of the competition, and they beat us.
Can you just take us through the whole process? Because, you know, Mike Pereira was tweeting after the game that this was a point of emphasis, that this was a rule that the officials are told about by the director of officials, and that happens every week. You know, there are meetings with officials, and DVDs are exchanged, and they're told to look out for certain calls.
It's not even DVDs anymore.
Yes,
now it's basically a link, and
now it's on Vine.
Yes.
Well, no, Vine's
that's Gary's
too short.
New. I know it's Gary's new thing, though. I'm more needling you.
I don't even want to ask Gary about his Vine.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
If you're Snapchatting, we got big problems.
Well, but take us through the process.
No, I think, I'm not an official in this league, but Dean Blandino, who's the head of officiating now, what Mike was two generations ago, cuts videos both for individual crews to grade them, but then sends out, if they're called points of emphasis video memos or just things to focus on that go out to all the officiating crews. I don't pay attention to what each of those are each week, but if Mike Pereira said that was one last week, that was one. What I do know was there were 400 some all odd field goals this year that had never been called before, and from what I'm told anyhow, it's happened a number of times, and I would argue in the abstract that at the end of a game with a 56-yard field goal, it's probably not the best time to call it. At the same time, it's the rule, and we should know better, and we shouldn't have been in that position, like I said. And the only thing that does where I'm happy is when Bill and Rex are going at it, and Bill says something, and Rex says it isn't true, I'm glad the league has come out and said it's true, because I'll take Bill over Rex in that category any day. We should never have been there. We lost the game. And congratulations in all seriousness to them. If they pointed it out to the officials, that's part of the competition, and they won the game.
Is it uncommon when there's a new rule or a tweak that it takes a couple of weeks of adjustment with the officials? I mean, because that the first thing that I thought of was it used to be second-level pushing. Now guys are going to try to figure it out in terms of coaches. And look, you know, you've been around the league for 20 some odd years now. When there's a new rule, is there a natural couple week adjustment period to officials to get it on tape to help them understand about calling a rule or not?
I think it really depends on what the rule is. I think in this case, my guess is this rule in general just it didn't percolate up through the competition committee. It came in a good way from players who viewed it as a health and safety issue. And because it came up that way, we were told about the rule. I'm sure the officials come here in training camp. It's our responsibility to know it. But it probably didn't receive the same amount of attention as the new rule with the crown of the helmet.
Or as face guarding did, or something like that, yeah.
It's not controversial.
Right. And look, it takes place on such a small percentage of the plays. And to be fair, if you look at that rule by the letter of the law, it should be pretty straightforward, and guys don't do this. And it didn't get communicated internally properly, and we were unfortunately the victim of it. I'd be surprised if it gets called again this year anywhere, and maybe that was the emphasis that it needed. I don't mean it's not going to get called because people are going to be highly aware of it.
Okay, now
and there's no point in that.
Steer clear.
Yeah, I think we got a game in London today, San Francisco and Jacksonville. Roger came out and said, there will be a team in London. There will be a team in Los Angeles. How do you feel about that? I mean, to get two teams going, that's a big chunk to chew on, isn't it?
I don't think Roger was talking expansion. I think what Roger was talking about was at the right point in time with the right situation, a team will end up playing in London full-time and a team will end up playing in Los Angeles. What's critical and what we talk about at our meetings is that each franchise ends up best positioned for success. So in the case of Los Angeles, that means that you have a great stadium, which in the world's hub of entertainment, you have a stadium that can showcase what we believe is the greatest team sport and provide the amenities that are needed and also a great platform for the Super Bowl. Because when we go back to L.A., I think you'll see the Super Bowl there on a regular basis. And Los Angeles, like cities like Boston, New York, Chicago, it's tough to get major new development done that needs very serious infrastructure. We have some options. When that happens and you have the stadium thing locked up, we need great local ownership. And when that's all there, that'll happen. In London, it's a little bit different. We'll need that state-of-the-art venue. Wembley might play that role, or there are opportunities, I think, to build from the ground up. But what we want to be sure of is that the market will embrace and support a full-time team as their own. And I think we've been very encouraged with how first the single games went, the double games, and now we're moving into three games a year. Our TV ratings have increased dramatically for the whole NFL, and we hear more and more from fans over there that they'd like to support a team full-time.
Now, so Jackson, my best guess is Jacksonville goes to London. I don't know, you're not going to say that, but Gresh, who would go to L.A.?
I think it would depend on, and I'm going to put the business hat on for a second. It just does not have to be confirmed by the president of the Patriots.
This is not Jonathan Krabs.
No, but I think that the next time there's a really good team who's got strong ownership, who is willing to make that move and to roll the dice, a stadium is there to where if their municipality or city doesn't maybe necessarily help out in terms of an existing stadium,
I think
there's leverage there. I also think that it's how you jack up the domestic television money is to say you're in the number two television market now. There's no way anyone can refute that. My thing is with London is the league, and this might be an onus on every existing owner in the league at this point, might the Shield have to build a facility, whether it's in New York or somewhere on the East Coast, where when the London team plays stateside, they have operations here, and then maybe it's not fun. I don't know if every owner throws in a million or whatnot, but if it's going to grow if it's going to grow the overall pot, I think the league may have to make an investment to make sure that the players are taken care of in that instance.
No, clearly when we go to London, the logistics of scheduling and training, there'll have to be a great plan for it. and it'll be all be done first class. You're 100% right, and that might very well be what happens. But I think there are some people at the league who are spending a lot of time thinking about the various options, and then whatever club ends up being the club to go there, I think we'll have a say in that too. And it'll be a negotiation, a discussion between the team going and the league, and then also the other 31, everybody will have to vote on it. My guess is it'll be a well-thought-out plan when that day comes, and I think it'll be a great day for the National Football League to go out and really have a foothold in continental Europe, and I think London is a great cosmopolitan city that'll be perfect.
Well, Sky Sports has a lot of money to spend.
Well, for the or possibly Richard Branson, who knows? But they both have a ton of money.
Are you up in space?
But here's the deal: LA for a Super Bowl would be awesome. San Diego's a great place for a Super Bowl, but to have another place on the West Coast for a Super Bowl would be phenomenal.
Well, the one thing with San Diego is their stadium.
It's
small. You're not
going
to see a. You're not going to see another Super Bowl in San Diego unless there's a new venue there.
Yeah, but it's a great city, but L.A. would be the place to go. Jonathan, we didn't get to the trade deadline. We know that's coming up on Tuesday. Maybe we'll wrap about that coming up this Sunday.
Sure.
Maybe there'll be some activity. I think the Patriots would go to get Larry Fitzgerald, but that's just me. Schefter's reporting it that he's available.
I threw around $1 million around like nothing, and this guy's trading away multiple first-round picks.
Whatever it takes.
For a guy who makes $20 million a year.
Whatever it takes.
They better off signing Jacoby Ellsbury. Well, maybe not.
All right, Jonathan. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you next week.
President of the Patriots, Jonathan Kraft, inside the owner's box.